Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, April 25th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's glad to have you with us today. On today's show, we'll talk with Mandy Massey and W. Mitchell about his Pillars of America presentation. Local filmmaker Greg Cheney will tell us about his movie, 1.5 Days. And Riverbend teacher T.J. Kramer will be here to discuss the production, Lost in the Woods. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 55 degrees here in the capital city, 54 in Hoonah, 55 in Gustavus.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. 15 people are being indicted in South Dakota for the illegal trafficking of hundreds of migratory birds. Officials with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service say it's one of the largest cases of bird trafficking they've uncovered. Lee Strubinger reports.
Authorities are releasing the names of 15 individuals who are charged with trafficking eagles and other migratory birds. The indictments are a result of a 2-year investigation into bird trafficking. They say roughly 250 eagles and over 100 hawks and owls have been trafficked during this time. Randy Seiler is the U.S. attorney for South Dakota. He says this was an illegal black market trafficking of eagles and eagle parts, like feathers, talons, and beaks, for profit.
There was no cultural sensitivity, there was no spirituality, there was no tradition in the manner in which these defendants handled these birds. It basically was a chop shop for eagles. They had eagle feathers stuffed in garbage bags, in Walmart bags, blood all over, transported them in various vehicles and coolers.
Seiler says the defendants in the case are both native and non-native. He says he also expects federal charges against the defendants. Dan Rollins is an assistant special agent with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He says bird trafficking is happening across the country and into Canada.
Although the scope of today's announcement and indictments is South Dakota, there has been information and spin-off cases because of this one in other parts of the country as well. So this is not a localized problem. It's a national problem.
Rollins says traffickers are selling these birds for anywhere from $1,000 to $1,200. Initial appearances for the defendants are set for May 1st in Rapid City. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Indigenous people from around the world are marking the 10th anniversary of the adoption of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples as they meet this week in New York at the UN. Native leader Willie Littlechild from Canada is reflecting on the decades of work to bring Indigenous rights into the international arena.
It was not till 1977 when the first delegation in the modern era went to Geneva. I was in that delegation. So for me, this is approaching 40 years of work on the UN Declaration. So you can imagine how tremendously happy I feel about reaching a milestone such as a decade on the UN Declaration.
Littlechild says some of the requests and justice seeking of Indigenous people include treaty rights, spiritual rights, and environmental protection. The non-binding declaration establishes a framework of standards for the well-being and rights of Indigenous people worldwide. Canada was among countries to first vote against the declaration, but later gave its support. First Nations leaders in Canada say the declaration is essential for reconciliation and nation building between Indigenous people and the government. Advocates are exploring ways to improve the health of young Native people through physical fitness and nutrition. The Nota Begay Third Foundation is helping lead the way. President Justin Heneman says reducing childhood obesity and diabetes is a priority.
And so we start with at a young age thinking about these issues, and we recognize that unfortunately so many of our young people, particularly in the state of New Mexico and really around the country, are disproportionately affected by the issue of obesity. And so it's an issue that eventually affects us down the road and leads to many other diseases that, frankly, are preventable.
The foundation is hosting a Healthy Kids, Healthy Futures event this week in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by BNSF Railway Company's STEM scholarships for business, mathematics, natural and physical sciences, technology, engineering, education, medicine, or health administration. Info available at aises.org/scholarships.
Support by Bears Ears National Monument, created to honor tribes and protect traditional access. More information, including the latest news about the monument, at protectbearsears.org. O-R-G.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on April 25th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour. And in the studio now is Mandy Massey of Glacier Valley Rotary. She's the media chair there. And also W. Mitchell, who will be speaking tomorrow at Centennial Hall as part of the Pillars of America presentation. Welcome to the show, Mandy and Mitchell.
Thank you for having us.
It's a pleasure. Nice to be on K2.
It's nice to have you here, sir. How are your travels getting here?
Superb. It was a nice trip up from Santa Barbara, where I woke up yesterday morning, through L.A., Seattle, and then Seattle, one guy was going to Texas, and I was going to one-up him and go to Juneau.
And is this your second time here?
Second time. I came through here in about 1982. I came down from Skagway, down the Lynn Canal, and thought I'd died and gone to heaven. It was just fish jumping up and down. This was late June, so longest day of the year, and everything was just perfect, and it's still perfect.
It's pretty nice out today.
I'm looking
isn't it?
At your window at that magnificent hill with a little bit of snow still up on top, and
yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Let's get back to you in a second. Mandy, for people that don't know what Pillars of America is or Glacier Valley Rotary, give us a little synopsis.
Sure, you bet. We are one of four Rotary clubs here in Juneau. We're Juneau Glacier Valley Rotary Club, and we are celebrating the 25th anniversary of Pillars of America. And some of you might know Bill Adair. He was a member at the time and suggested that we do this series. And at the time, it was the the Freedom Series instead of Speaker Series. But anyway, it's evolved. We have a lot of military personnel come up. We have people from all walks of life, all different adversities in their background, that they come and share their story of perseverance and determination. So that's what we're doing, and this year's no different, except we're celebrating 25 years.
Okay. Mitchell, you have quite a resume, Marine Corps, Mayor of Crested Butte, Colorado, a successful businessman. I understand you started a business that made sort of eco stoves. Is that right?
Wood stoves, wood burning stoves, Vermont Casting. Some of your listeners know of that, which now, long since I've been out of it, also makes fireplace inserts and grills and things like that. But originally we started out making cast iron stoves and highly efficient and really super popular in places just like this and in the mountains of Colorado where I lived for a bunch of years, and of course back east in Vermont, because in those days, in the 60s, our concern was not just how much fuel would cost, but whether you could buy it at all with embargoes and things like that. So this became a wonderful alternative to heating your home.
Okay. And during this career that I outlined, you're no stranger to adversity. Can you share with our listening audience some of the adverse events that you've faced?
I've had a couple of bumps along the way, none of which, fortunately, were in the Marines, other than drill instructors yelling at me. But in San Francisco, where I had another really cool job, I was a gripman on the San Francisco cable cars. I actually drove those things halfway to the stars and rang the bell and did the whole thing. I was on my way to work one day, and at an intersection, a Long Beach truck and I tried to occupy the same space at the same time, and that didn't work out too well.
They're a little bigger than motorcycles.
Bigger than motorcycles. The bike went down, the gas cap popped open, and out poured about 2.5 gallons of gasoline, and it ignited the heat of the engine. And as I will tell people in depth tomorrow, I became a human bonfire. And thanks to somebody working in a business on the corner that day with a fire extinguisher, I was still alive when the paramedics arrived, and long, long process of slowly recovering, waking up, realizing what had happened, 65% of my body burned, fingers gone, face gone, just as bad as you could ever imagine something to be. And I could talk about that some, but I could also talk about a couple of nurses named June and Nulon, who took care of me in that nearly 4 months in the hospital. And if you ever can imagine, in the worst moment of your life, the best two people in the world showing up and picking you up when you fall down, those two women who were still in my life and fabulous, and another woman who was the mom of my girlfriend, Beatrice. And so I had an awful lot of people in my corner. And today, my memories really are overwhelmingly of them. And today, the message that I share with audiences all around the world is it's not what happens to you, it's what you do about it. Because stuff happens, and then, as I will discuss more tomorrow, then you get to choose what's next. And fortunately for me, all of my choices have led sometimes to winding up in Juneau, Alaska.
And you were telling me before the interview that, you know, in your career as a businessman, you'd been speaking for a long time, but maybe officially you've been a motivational speaker for 30 years. Is that about right?
About that, yeah, Scott. I was on the radio in Hawaii when I got out of the Marines, was a disc jockey and newsreader. And then later was getting invited because I not only was burned, but 4.5 years after that, was in an airplane accident. I'm a pilot in Colorado, and I broke my back and was paralyzed. So I use a wheelchair to get around, which is very advantageous if you're chasing the girls downhill. When they run away from me uphill, it's not fair. But but fortunately for me, I came out of those experiences, and then I was elected mayor in Colorado, and there's a lot of different stories. But I was getting invited to speak a lot to disability groups and people who had had challenges. I never thought of it as motivational speaking. I just thought of it as a way to say to somebody, hey, just because you can't walk doesn't mean you can't roll. And sometimes rolling is all you need to help and lead and follow and make some differences. There's a whole bunch of people in Juneau in something called the Rotary Club who know something about leading and following and helping.
Yeah. I have your book in front of me. It's not what happens to you, it's what you do about it. When you wrote this, what was sort of the most surprising thing that you discovered about yourself just within the narrative of the book?
Well, I think that the thing that I discovered before and after and during the book was how much amazing resolve can exist in someone, and I'm sure I watched a lot of other people with that resolve and learned lessons from them. And the fact that it really doesn't matter how much time you've dealt with challenges in your life, if you can choose to focus forward, if you can choose to say, okay, it happened, it wasn't fair, I don't even know why it happened, it was my fault, their fault, somebody's fault, but I have a choice right now. And a girlfriend of mine from Colorado told me once, it's all right to look back, just don't stare. And if you can learn not to stare in that rearview mirror of life, and instead spend your time focusing on the windshield of life, and they make the windshield a lot bigger than the rearview mirror for a purpose. And if you can do that, choose to do that. And again, I'm sounding really smart and cool and glib and bright and all that stuff right now. But everything I've told you right now, somebody told me. So, but if you can listen along the way and learn along the way and choose along the way to be gracious and to have gratitude and to have the courage to decide, okay, I can look around me in the world. There are other people who've had bumps. And many of them have chosen instead to focus on what's next.
How old were you when that motorcycle accident happened in San Francisco?
I was about 27, and I tell anybody I'm hitting on that that was about 5 years ago. Sometimes they do the math and figure out that's not quite the number. But yeah, I was about 27, and again, enjoying life. Life was good. Had this wonderful girlfriend driving the cable cars. That is a cool job. That's probably like better than driving a boat up the Lynn Canal. You know, it's just this wonderful experience, and I loved it, and everything was really good. And after I was burned, boy, it was tough, and all kinds of tough stuff. But again, surrounded by people that were loving me and being wonderful to me and encouraging me, and maybe I already had it in my brain by then that I was responsible for Mitchell. And I'm not talking about blame and fault. I'm talking about I had the ability to respond and choose the response that I was going to demonstrate. And if people didn't like the way I looked, well, that was more of their problem than my problem. And when people would smile at me and say, "You're okay," just with a smile, I got to say, "Yeah, okay, I hear you, thank you."
So tomorrow at Centennial Hall, you'll be speaking more in depth, I'm sure, about some of these stories and experiences and way to keep looking through the windshield and not through the rearview mirror, among other things. Mandy, can you remind us of the sort of details on tomorrow?
Absolutely. Yeah, so there's still time to get your tickets at Hearthside Books. You can get them downtown or in the Valley, or just show up to the door tomorrow at Centennial Hall. Lunch is served at 11:30. I just want to kind of remind everyone of that. So you'll want to get there in plenty of time to park, stand in line, get your seat. You are served this wonderful lunch from the hangar on the wharf, and tickets are only $35. And bring a friend, or maybe you have someone in your life, a younger person in your life, middle school or high school age is very appropriate for this. As we know, our young people face their own adversities and challenges every day. And so why not grab one of those kids in your life and bring them with you? Pull them out of school for a couple hours, and you can get them back there about 1:30. Yeah, bring a coworker or a friend. There's still room, and we would love to fill every seat there to see Mitchell speak and tell his remarkable story.
Scott, I had a 13-year-old boy that came up to me. He was living in a home kind of place where kids that had just had awful, awful things happen to them were staying in Colorado, and he came up to me after a talk that I gave, one of the first times I really focused on kids particularly, and he said, "Mr. Mitchell, I've tried to end my life three times, and before I ever let anything bad happen to me, I'm going to remember what you said today, because I told him what I'm going to tell everyone tomorrow, that it's not what happens to you, it's what you do about it." And kids need to hear that message more than us old people. And sometimes us old people need to get reminded, too.
Okay. Tomorrow, 11:15.
Yeah, get there early. Come by at 11 and you can have a seat.
All right. Is there anything else that either of you would like to add?
You know, I would just like to tell your listeners that this is not a fundraiser. It's actually a community service project. And so we fundraise as a club all year. You might have heard of the Duck Derby or Bacon Fest. And that helps us bring incredible speakers like Mitchell up to Juneau for this series. And 200 of the tickets go. They're donated by the business community, our sponsors, so that the students have those tickets at no cost to them. So about 200 chairs are filled with students tomorrow.
That's great. Okay, and I just remembered that you gave us two tickets to give away on the air. So let's give it away to the person who can finish this sentence. Call Jeff Brown at 586-1212. It's not what happens to you, comma. If you can finish that sentence, you can have these two tickets to tomorrow's lunch. Again, W. Mitchell and Mandy Massey, thank you for coming on the show, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Scott, it's a treat to be with you, and I'm glad to be talking to all your K2 listeners.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, we shall overcome. We Hello, this is Stephen Pfister, Facility Manager at Centennial Hall, part of the CBJ Parks and Recreation. Centennial Hall, Juneau's Convention Center, located in the heart of downtown's Willoughby District, is an important economic generator in our community, hosting a variety of events with over 80,000 people attending each year. Events include the Alaska Folk Festival, Celebration, and a variety of conventions, conferences, and fundraisers. For more information, call 586-5283 or visit our website at centennialhall.net.
Support for this program comes from the Prospector Hotel. The hotel is pet-friendly and features non-smoking accommodations, an on-site restaurant, and parking. Reservations at 586-3737 or prospectorhotel.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 25th. Scott Burton, your host in the studio now, is local filmmaker Greg Chaney. We're going to be talking about the feature-length romantic comedy 1.5 Days and its release, pre-release tomorrow, Wednesday at the Gold Town Nick. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here on such a wonderful day.
Yeah, right? Tell us about 1.5 Days. What's the story?
Well, basically, it's the classic boy meets girl story, but it's all Juno style. It's a guy on the dock, a local guy, and he meets up with a woman who comes off a cruise ship, and they end up spending a very intense period of time together. So it's a romantic comedy. You can imagine that they probably end up together at the end. That's not giving away too much.
And you are a producer, writer.
Yeah, it's kind of a crazy thing. I did, for reasons that I still don't quite understand, I decided last spring that I wanted to do a feature-length movie. I've done a lot of documentaries, so I wanted to do something that was scripted, so I could tell the actors what to say instead of waiting for them to say the right things like you do in documentaries. And So I got the idea in the spring. I was down in Los Angeles with the documentary The Empty Chair, and a woman I had met, an actress who was in a movie I'd seen in another film festival in Oregon, had come to the screening in L.A., and she said she wanted to be in a film. And I'd seen her in other films, and she was really good at dialogue. And so I was thinking, I really need somebody who's really good with dialogue to pull off this kind of a thing, because it wasn't going to be that much of an action movie. And so So when she said she was interested, and Jeff Hedges is a local guy that I was really interested in putting in a movie, and so I thought, wow, write a romantic comedy around these two characters. And it's all outdoors in Juneau, and so it's, you know, very much in the landscape. And so I wrote the script, put together the agreement with, she's a Screen Actors Guild actress, and Jeff Hedges is actually a Screen Actors Guild actor. So I had to go through the union, get it union approved, which is a really long process. I was very deep into the bureaucracy, which I was trying to just be creative, and turned out to be, I had to be kind of my own business manager. You know, we rented cameras, got the best deck cameras we could afford, which is different than the best you can buy. And, you know, we put it together, had multiple camera operators at all times, like 3 camera operators, so that we could allow for a little bit of improvisation and catch different angles. But the real, I don't want to say thrill or excitement, but kind of drama that happened is about 2 days before we were going to start filming, Jeff Hedges sent me a text from the emergency room. I'm in the emergency room. I've been in a motorcycle accident. So I called him back. I said, can you perform? I was in my head. I was thinking, well, maybe we can rewrite this all to happen in the hospital. But he's like, no, I got a cracked rib and punctured lungs and not going to be able to do it. So he's okay now. But at the time, it kind of threw our schedule into a bit of a, you know, kind of a spin. And but Brian Crowder came out of the, you know, magically. I had some other friends who had used him. And he stepped up, and I threw a feature-length script at him and gave him about a week to learn it. And, boy, he just came through. So saved the movie, and we rescheduled everything and shot it about a week and a half later.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty much insane.
And you said you did it in about 3.5 days.
Yeah, I was trying to do this multiple camera thing where you can capture improvisation or whatever happens. Like, it never happened, but I was hoping a porcupine would walk through the scene, you know, and we could capture that, whatever happened, and not... with traditional filming, you try to, you know, film like 2 people in one shot, and then you'll do over the shoulder and then over the other shoulder, and you do each scene over again. And it makes it really hard to match things up, especially if unexpected things happen, like you'll have happen if you're filming outdoors. And since we filmed the whole thing outdoors, I want to be able to capture anything that happened from multiple angles. So as we were walking, most of this is on Perseverance Trail, you'll see the 2 characters walking forward. Well, what you're not seeing is about 8 people walking backwards in front of them, filming, and then other people guiding them, and you know, the sound boom and all that stuff walking up the trail, but mostly backwards.
So, like you were saying earlier, mm-hmm. a lot of your background's in documentary.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
you wanted
exactly.
to try narrative.
Yes.
What was that like for you?
Well, in some ways it was awesome because you knew what they were going to say, but it was also very challenging because you're kind of wanting a certain feeling to happen at different scenes. And when you're doing a real compressed film, you know, schedule like we were trying to pull off, it gets really tough, you know. So you can't do a lot of, you know, take scenes like 10 times or sometimes even more like they do in Hollywood. So you kind of have to roll with it. And fortunately, both Brian and Kiyomi had really good chemistry. And so they really worked together. You're just totally believable. So that was the best part of the whole thing.
Okay. And how about your crew? Who participated?
Well, a lot of locals, you know, had Anton, and we had David Purdy and Sarah Everett. And, boy, I'm trying to remember everybody. But it was quite a group.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet.
And my wife helped a lot. She always deserves huge credit because she stepped in and did sound at the last minute because the person I thought was going to do sound just wasn't able to do it the last minute. So she came in and pulled that off. So that was helpful.
Looking back, I'm sure not only the pre-production, you know, for those 3.5 days and then the post-production.
Yes,
there's
been a lot of that. Mm-hmm.
Looking back on the whole process, sort of what are you most proud of?
Honestly, I'm proud that we finished it. You know, it was a very challenging time frame. When you're filming outdoors, you know, lots of challenges come up. We had Butch Laughlin has a float plane, and we used that quite a bit. And so that's an integral piece of the whole thing, and that we were able to fly. Getting all the permits for all this, I know that doesn't sound very impressive, but the reality is it's a lot to do. And we were able to pull it off in Juneau with almost an entire Juneau crew except for Kiyomi, who came up from Los Angeles. Yeah.
Okay, and you can see the results of all of this tomorrow night? Is that
right? Tomorrow night at the Gold Town. Yeah, really excited about being in a real theater, popcorn and everything.
And what time does that start?
7 p.m. And it's going to be a little bit rainy tomorrow, so you don't have to worry about coming in out of the sun. So it'll be a good day to go to a movie.
Now, I found a preview or a trailer. Is that an official trailer?
Yeah, there's a trailer out, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just look for 1.5 days, Greg Cheney.
Yeah, and I use the numbers, the number one and then the little 1/2. So that's one way to look for it.
Okay.
So it doesn't get mixed up.
Tomorrow night, 7 p.m., Gold Town Theater. Check it out.
It should be fun. It should be a great time.
Thanks,
and there'll be
Greg.
People there from the movie, so if you want to get in and you know, ask some questions or whatever afterwards. That's always fun, too.
Anything else you'd like to add, Greg?
Just thanks to everybody that's been so supportive.
All right, thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 25th of April, 2017. It's the birthday of the poet Ted Kooser, born Ames, Iowa, 1939, earned his living working in the insurance industry, rose early every morning so he could write poetry for an hour and a half. His latest collection is The Bell in the Bridge. It was 100 years ago today, the First Lady of Song was born, Ella Fitzgerald, Newport News, Virginia, 1917. Got her start at Amateur Night at the Apollo Theater in Harlem. She was 17. She was going to dance, but there was a pretty good dancing act right before her, so she decided to sing instead. It was on this day, 1928, Buddy, the first seeing eye dog, was presented to Morris S. Frank, who had lost the use of his eyes. He'd been using a young boy as a guide, but the boy got bored easily. So, 19 years old, Mr. Frank contacted a woman in Germany who was training dogs to be guides for World War I veterans who had been blinded on the battlefield by mustard gas, and Buddy was shipped over to the United States to become Mr. Frank's companion. It's the birthday of Oliver Cromwell, born in Huntingdonshire, England, 1599. He led the Puritan side in the English Civil War, which led to the beheading of King Charles I in 1649, and Cromwell became Lord Protector of the Commonwealth of England, Scotland, and Ireland. He was an outspoken Puritan, created the Blue Laws in England, which prohibited swearing, drunkenness, adultery, and blasphemy. And it was on this date in 1831, the New York and Harlem Railroad Company was founded. First line opened the year after, ran for a mile along the Bowery from Prince Street to 14th Street, later extended into Harlem. Horses pulling streetcars. Now the route is part of the Metro North Commuter Rail System's Harlem Line. Here's a poem for today by Samuel Hazo, The Necessary Brevity of Pleasures. Prolonged, they slacken into pain or sadness in accordance with the law of apples. One apple satisfies, two apples cloy, three apples glut. Call it a tug of war between enough and more than enough, between sufficiency and greed, between the stay-at-homers and globe-trotting see-the-worlders, like lovers seeking heaven in excess, the hopelessly insatiable. Forget how passion sharpens appetites that gross indulgence numbs. Result, the haves have not what all the have-nots have, since much of having is the need to have. Even my dog knows that, and more than that. He slumbers in a moon of sunlight, scratches his twitches and itches in measure, savors every bite of grub with equal gratitude, and stays determinedly in place unless what's suddenly exciting happens. Viewing mere change as threatening, he relishes a few undoubtable and proven pleasures to enjoy each day in sequence and with canine moderation. They're there for him in waiting, and he never wears them out. A poem by Samuel Hazo, The Necessary Brevity of Pleasures, from his collection A Flight to Elsewhere, published by Autumn House Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Progressive Insurance with the Name Your Price tool, offering a range of coverage and price options to choose from. Now that's Progressive. More at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The Alaska State Improv Festival returns to McPheeters Hall in the Hangar Ballroom, April 27 to May 1, with groups from across the continent featuring Liss and Sands from San Francisco. Shows begin at 6:30 each night. The Alaska State Improv Festival, April 27 to May 1, McPheeters Hall and the Hangar Ballroom. Visit asifest.com for more details. Alaska State Improv Festival, April 27 to May 1, asifest.com.
Support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
You are listening to a Juneau afternoon here on Tuesday, April 25th. It's about 20 minutes until the top of the hour, and I have a crew in the studio now, and we're going to be talking about a new production out of Riverbend called Lost in the Woods. I have TJ, second grade teacher and songwriting group leader. Welcome to the show, TJ.
Thank you. Thank
nice
you so much.
Nice to have you. And TJ Kramer, right?
Yes, yes.
And I also have Rebecca. She's the music director at Riverbend,
yep,
and also the director of JAM, which is Juneau Alaska Music Matters, both there at Riverbend and, did you say, Ok Bay as well?
And Ok Bay, yeah.
And remind me your last name, Rebecca.
Rebecca Ricker.
Nice to have you on the show. And we also have Kelvin. Hi, Kelvin. All right. And we have Josh. And Josh, remind me of your last name.
LaBoca.
All right. And you run, among other things, Second to None Music. Is
yeah.
that right?
Yeah. Second
all
to
right.
None Sound. Yeah.
Second to None Sound. Welcome to the show, Josh. Nice
Thanks.
To have you here as well. I guess let's start with you, Rebecca. Tell us a little bit about JAM and how this
came
to be.
JAM, Juneau Alaska Music Matters, is a
music program, and it's based an instrumental program where we give students at the elementary level. The program is at Glacier Valley Elementary, Ock Bay, and Riverbend, and we give students the opportunity to play a stringed instrument, and that's our primary focus, is to give them the benefit of playing a musical instrument. And along with that, they also get other music enrichments, such as songwriting. We've done folk dance and tinikling and other kinds of different music programs along with that. So we're here to talk about our amazing program at Riverbend. It has the most fantastic songwriting program through JAM. And Mr. Kramer has been working a couple of years with these kids, so it's come along, yeah.
All right, so this is one of the enrichments, right?
Yes.
The songwriting
yes.
class. And how many students do you have generally?
We have a couple different groups, 45-minute sessions each, and they differ. Right now we have in between 12 and 25 in each group. And, yeah, we are also doing a tech enrichment, so they can learn the recording process soon. We're going to start to do that, too.
Okay. And some of these students, among the songs they wrote, is this one, Lost in
yes,
the Woods?
Yes, Lost in the Woods. So we have seven girls who kind of naturally formed this group. It's seven of the girls have been in this songwriting group for the past couple years. So they went through the fundamentals that we started in the beginning, just normal song structure, and they kind of really got a grasp on it, and it's done really well. And so they naturally formed this group and wrote a song called Lost in the Woods with another co-teacher that I have, Mr. JP, who's awesome. He helped write the melody for them and played the guitar, and they ended up writing this whole song themselves.
Okay. And then recorded at Second to None Sound.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. We actually went on location at the school. So basically, not just with in-studio, like in-house equipment, we actually have stuff to actually go out on location, like the school, and we actually recorded each vocal, each of the seven singers separately, and the guitar separately, and then we took it back to our mix room, and then that's when we finished the song.
And did you shoot the video as well?
Yeah, we actually did that on the same day that we did the recording, but we also did it on a separate day to finish the recording, to finish the rest of the videos, like all the shots.
Okay. How long has Second to None Sound been around in Juneau?
Officially, December of 2014.
Okay.
So it's only about like two years. Yeah.
And how did you guys meet, and how did you decide to make a music video out of a song from an elementary school? And for our listeners, if you haven't seen this video, it's very cool. It's professional. It sounds good. Great harmonies.
Thank you.
Right?
Thank
like,
you. So I have a personal music project going, and so this is my engineer, Josh. He records what I do. So that's how I met Josh, and songwriting is just a passion of mine since I write my own music and things like that. And so, I noticed how good it was. I was like, we have to record this. And when I asked Josh, he said, do you want me to bring video stuff? And I said, yeah, absolutely. So we got going and turned out really, really good. So they're very talented. You're right. It does look and sound professional, and it's thanks to Second to None. Yeah, they do great.
Yeah, they really did a great job of reflecting what our school, like the feel and the look of our school.
Absolutely.
Like when I watched that video, I was like, oh yeah, that is Riverbend. Or it just feels good, like what we go into, and those girls just.
Oh, definitely. And we have a bunch of after school programs going. So we have LEAP, the Learning Enrichment After School Program. We have JAM, and so they had plenty of places and kids to film throughout that video.
This is a beautiful product, I'd say, and result of music in the schools, right?
Mm-hmm.
What else do you two see, or you three, or you four, you see music doing for kids in schools?
Oh, endless amount of things. The amount of passion that I saw come out of these girls, and they now have something that they want to do when they get older. They have something to work towards. It's not only music. It's helping them with literacy. They're writing these songs. It's helping them get out a creative release that could help them with anything they're going through.
And our jam program, it starts at the kindergarten level for kindergarten and first grade at our elementary programs. The students receive 90 minutes of instruction during the day, and it's looked at as an intervention to teach school readiness skills, to teach the self-discipline and the strength that you need to play an instrument, and that's why the schools support it and really stand behind us, and it grows and flows into an after-school program once the students get into second grade.
Definitely.
And older.
Josh, how about you, your perspective as a professional sound person working with these kids? What was that like for you?
One of the things that I had was expecting, but I was also hopeful for was that they were ready to go the day of recording. And that's the most important thing that I try to tell any artist of any age is that once we start tracking you, once we get your vocals down, think of it as you are performing to that mic. There may not be a bunch of people there, but there's going to be thousands of people that are going to be listening once the end product is finished. And when I had gotten there, we were set up. The first one, she was ready to go, and then it was like a chain reaction after that. Everybody was ready to go. We did about, I would say, 2 to 3 takes. The main vocal was about, I'd say, maybe 4, maybe 5 takes. And then they had remembered all of their lyrics, and they were pretty much spot on. There was energy, there was vibes going on, and they had each vocal. When I was tracking everything, each vocal had a separate personality. So my thought was, after everything was done, was like they had work ethic. They knew what to do with pre-production going into the production phase.
With preparation from class.
Yes. Yes. And I record with Josh a lot, too, so I kind of know what he wants ahead of time, so that helps a little bit.
So I found this video, I think, on Facebook earlier, and I was just trying to find it. Where can our listeners find it?
The video is on YouTube, and it's Destiny Squad Lost in the Woods. There's actually a version that got leaked a little bit before. So if you go to the version that is 1 second shorter, and it also says from second to none sound, that is the one to look at. And then you can also get the song, and it will help an amazing cause for Riverbend. You can buy the song on iTunes as well.
Okay. What's next for Jam, Rebecca?
Well, we are finishing up our year with a concert on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
All our students will be performing on their stringed instruments, on their violins, violas, and cellos, and we'll have some nice little songwriters dispersed in our concert. Then we're done, I think, for the season. You might see us at the Maritime Festival and Community Day on campus, and we'll resume then in the fall.
Yeah. And TJ, you said the one that's 1 second shorter?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Cool. I got it.
Thank you.
And we'll go out on that.
Okay.
Okay, lots of exciting stuff. Thanks for teaching music to our community's youth.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, before we go, is there anything else that any of you would like to add?
Just if you have a child that wants to check out Jam, goes to any of the Riverbend, Glacier Valley, Ock Bay, please check it out. It is amazing. We're going to be doing tech stuff next year, learning how to record, adding a lot more enrichments, and as always, violin, viola,
cello.
Yeah. So check it out.
Second to none sound.
Yes.
We handle the whole music business. So basically, we'll have your lyrics copyrighted, licensed. We'll have distribution, and we also track everything. If you're an artist that wants to jump from a hobby into a career and continue to have this with what you want to do, this is what we also help you on, is the business side of music as well.
Where are you guys located physically?
The recording that we do is in Douglas. And the mix room that we have is actually in the Valley.
Okay. So. And what's the best place to find you online?
So the website is called, it's spelled JBOAUDIOE, and it's jboaudio.com. That's what, ever since the Army, everybody's called me Jabo Audio, even Sergeant Jabo.
And where can we find Jam probably on Facebook, Juno Alaska Music
Matters. Juno Alaska Music Matters.
Right.
I think junomusicmatters.org.
Thanks again for being on the show.
And Ms. Ricker is an amazing music teacher.
Oh, thank you.
And here we go, Destiny Squad Lost in the Woods.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are here. On May 22nd, Search will open the doors to its updated and expanded Children's Dental Clinic. Staffed by board-certified pediatric dentists and outfitted with the latest in pediatric dental technology, the new clinic will provide your child with a lifetime of healthy smiles. All kids' smiles welcome, from the first tooth to 17 years old. Call 789-KIDS to make an appointment for your child today. This message brought to you by Search.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, April 25th. It's about 8 minutes until the top of the hour.
This is Bird Note. That's one of the country's most unforgettable birds, a scissor-tailed flycatcher. And right now, they're migrating north to nest in the open country of Texas, Oklahoma, and the South Central region. The scissor-tailed flycatcher goes beyond elegant. It's truly a fanciful bird, robin-sized, the palest of silver grays, with a slender, deeply forked tail that's longer than its body. And when the scissor-tail lifts its wings, it flashes vivid salmon-pink flanks and underwings. Stunning! Most of the scissor-tail's closest relatives have normal-length tails, but with that extra length and the scissor-shaped structure comes incredible agility in flight. As the bird flies, it can spread and fold its tail, dramatically altering the surface area. It's almost like the scissor-tail has an extra pair of wings as it twists in midair, chasing down an insect. When displaying to a female, the male scissor-tail flies straight up and dives steeply down again and again, opening and closing its tail. And to top it off, he may even perform a reverse mid-air somersault, flashing his pink sides and that long streamer of a tail in the same instant. Breathtaking. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Thank you for tuning into a Juno Afternoon today. Tomorrow on the show, Crystal Borland will be here to highlight Saturday's Comedy for a Cause. We'll talk about the upcoming performance by the Juno Cabaret celebrating the music of Cole Porter. Sarah Pruitt will tell us about Wednesday's United Way cruise. And Jeremy Johnson will tell us about the details of a CERT training. Those interviews, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more Wednesday on a Juno Afternoon. It's currently 55 degrees here in the capital city, partially cloudy, looking pretty sunny at the moment out of Studio A here at KTOO. The forecast for tonight calls for a 20% chance of rain after 1 a.m. and mostly cloudy with a low around 37. And going into tomorrow, Wednesday, a 20% chance of rain, cloudy with a high near 57. And Thursday's forecast calls for rain, mostly cloudy with a high near 54. Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.